and bound to follow the charter. Mm-hmm. And the charter says reasonably related to the provision of utility services. Mm-hmm. And so someone's going to have to explain to me how, in this instance, my ratepayers should support this, and that's separate from whether we find another source. Mm-hmm. And I think having a debate about the color of money is fine in the abstract. I'm hoping we can find another pot and just put this issue aside and have a respectful disagreement about whether it's something we should or shouldn't do.
And finally, so, Commissioner Fish, I just want to reiterate what Jane and Howard already said, and I think Charlie also said it, is that right now there's zero SDC coming in to support the water rates. And so zero times anything is still zero. So right now what we're asking is to look at how do we bring in funding. And the action plan that's presented before you today is a toolkit to help make that happen. And so the ratepayers, we included being ratepayers, would say, if we are going to get more funds with this ball rolling to make a bigger snowball, yeah, this is the way to go.
I just appreciate the conversation because it points to the absolute no-win situation that we're cast in. Spend the money when people think it has a larger value. Don't spend it if it's outside of the charter. But what it really illustrates, with all due respect, mm-hmm. is that there's no boundaries. And we just say that on this we like it, on this we don't. And actually, I give the council a lot of credit in the last year for working to get back into our lanes and treat the ratepayers as different than taxpayers. And I think this conversation illustrates where they converge and overlap, there's confusion. And when we talk as if one is the other, there's confusion. And I'm simply suggesting that we are all better off. You, because you're paying taxpayer dollars to defend lawsuits, because uncertainty about our utilities is not good for anybody. And us, because we're in the middle of that fight. And it's not a fight about courage. It's literally a fight about whether it's an appropriate use of ratepayer dollars or not. And that's something we ought to grapple with and we ought to struggle with, particularly if there's an alternative funding scheme. That's the only point I want to make.
And one solution might be that, you know, when SDCs were created and thought about and they were applied even-handedly to different divisions, would be to say that maybe the utility district would be one that wouldn't... You don't leverage SDC. You don't use SDC dollars on investment because of the politics that's right now. And you have to deal with the politics of right now. We understand the politics. We know what's gone on. We feel your pain. And that would be great. Step one side, find another pot, use some SDCs, not yours, whatever. Get creative. You guys are so smart, you'll crack this.
Well, same to you. What I take away from this discussion is, one, all of us here on the council want to make this plan real and make it work. Two, I think this discussion just illustrates that we've got some smart and passionate leaders in the community, so we appreciate you. So maybe we can continue this debate later or not, but I think if no good deed goes unpunished, maybe we ought to go ahead and do something. At the zoo a long time ago, before one of their remodels, there was a little piece of public art, which was a bronze plaque that was embedded in one of the retaining walls, and it was just for fun. It said, on this spot in 1884, nothing happened. And I don't know what happened to that, because they've remodeled the zoo a couple of times, and I don't see it up there anymore. But I certainly don't think any of us wants to reinstall that plaque with a different date on it in Old Town Chinatown. So, you know, the goal is to make something happen, and that's very much the spirit of this plan. Mm-hmm. So your counsel is good. We shouldn't get mired in a debate about how. The what is what matters.
Mr. Mayor,
thank you so much.
I'd like to ask a question to the panel, playing off actually something that Helen said, which is, how many of you are Portland water and sewer ratepayers? But I thought the point Helen made was an important one. I thought it probably did apply to more than one of you.
And property tax payers.
Mm-hmm. another observation I just wanted to make before we close this part of the discussion is, I do think that historically politicians and citizens tend to make a distinction. In fact, maybe we make it more often than we should, but it does tend to be made between spending money on something and agreeing not to collect money. I think that there's generally more of a tendency to accept a decision to forgo the collection of possible money than to spend money. And, for example, when it came to the Convention Center Hotel, I voted against giving a tax break to that project. I was outvoted, not just 4-1, but whatever it was, like 15-1, because I was the sole no vote in three governments. I thought that my position is the right position. I suspect, though, that if the question had not been forgoing possible tax revenue, but writing a check to Hyatt, there would have been more than one no vote. Yeah. So I do think that, I think that distinction is probably made more often than it should be, but I think it's a distinction which at least sometimes has a difference, especially when you're talking about revenue, which is some reason to believe you might never get otherwise. Also, I just wanted to say that I'm somewhat disappointed, although maybe it's not exactly on point, but I think somebody should have quoted Billy Preston and pointed out that nothing from nothing leaves nothing. You got to have something.
Thank you. There you go, Steve.
Good
to
come on.
Thanks again.
Thank you all very much. Great work. So I think that's our formal panel from the Community Association that put this plan together. Now we'll take public testimony. How many people do we have signed up, Colin?
I have 13.
Okay.
Was Lene Berg speaking for your...
I'm sorry?
Lene Berg, when she's...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I think we did have Lene set up for testimony. Sorry, Lene, leave you out. Clean and safe district herself.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners, and I won't reiterate the Billy Preston quote since Commissioner Novak has already articulated it. Again, my name is Lene Berg, and I'm the Executive Director of Downtown Clean and Safe, and I'm here today to voice my organization's support for the Portland Development Commission's Old Town Chinatown 5-Year Action Plan. Our Clean and Safe operational headquarters are located in Old Town Chinatown. We are pleased to be a leading partner in promoting public safety and retail activity in the district. We have partnered with social service agencies in the neighborhood for many years. We contract with Central City Concern to create jobs and provide cleaning services throughout the ESD. Clean and Safe coordinates patrol schedules with businesses near the Burnside Bridge, including Mercy Corps, University of Oregon, and the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine, to address undesirable behaviors. And we also support the continued funding for police walking beats in Old Town Chinatown. We are happy to provide daily janitorial services and biohazard cleanup, private security patrols with our partner, Portland Patrol Incorporated, and support special neighborhood events like the Neighborhood Cleanup Day and the upcoming National Night Out events. In addition to our security and cleaning programs, our team of sidewalk ambassadors regularly circulate Old Town Chinatown, providing directions and information to locals and tourists at Union Station, Lan Su Garden, and Portland Saturday Market. We are lending our retail expertise to help attract new neighborhood investments to activate key properties and promote business vitality. In partnership with PDC and the Old Town Chinatown Community Association, we are developing and will execute a neighborhood retail strategy similar in scope to the successful downtown retail strategy. Over the past 5 years, the downtown retail strategy has improved the retail vacancy rate from 12.5% to below 5%, as many new local and independently owned businesses have opened downtown. And we hope to achieve similar, if not greater, successes in Old Town Chinatown. Key components of the retail strategy for Old Town Chinatown include aggregating data on vacant spaces, reaching out to real estate professionals to publicize development opportunities, collect market research data, including pedestrian counts, employment information, and transit ridership, and preparing and disseminating marketing materials about the neighborhood and retail opportunities therein. The Old Town Chinatown retail strategy will focus on recruiting local and independent retailers and restaurants to the district, with an emphasis on businesses that reflect the district's heritage and creative class. Our pop-up shop program will be a key part of these recruitment efforts, and once more housing is built in the district, we will target basic neighborhood services, including grocery, pharmacy, and service retail. Finally, in partnership with the Portland State University's Business Outreach Program, we will work to support existing businesses in the area by funding hours of business consulting assistance to 5 Chinese-owned businesses in the neighborhood. PSU's Business Outreach Program specializes in working with minority and women-owned businesses, bringing professional business expertise and the assistance of students from various disciplines ranging from accounting to marketing and social media. Your support of PDC's 5-year action plan for Old Town Chinatown, including the SDC waivers for moderate income housing, will ensure that the neighborhood's future is safe, vibrant, and is a diverse community. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Lenny? Thanks very much.
Mayor, do we have any invited testimony from either for-profit or nonprofit developers?
I don't believe so. No, I think that was the panel. That was the neighborhood. Obviously, Mr. Gortmaker is a developer, but he's here on behalf of the community association. So we'll see if we have any in the audience. So let's take the sign-up sheet.
We have 13 more people to speak. And the first 3, please come on up, are Ronald Peterson, Joe Walsh, and Dan Lenzen. They'll be followed by Sarah Stevenson, Kathleen Bushman, and Rehana Ansari.
Good afternoon. Go ahead, Dan, while the others are coming up.
All righty. Hi, Mayor and Council. My name is Dan Lenzen, and I guess I can be considered a for-profit. Today I'm representing over 50 businesses. 20-plus of the business entities are under my umbrella with Concept Entertainment, Hospitality Management, Foresight Development, and Real Estate, Venture Hospitality and Real Estate. And I'm also here as chair of the Old Town Hospitality Group, representing 30 of the 55 OLCC liquor licensees in Old Town, employing approximately 1,000 people, and as a board member of the Old Town Chinatown Community Association. Our development group on the for-profit side is in support of the PDC 5-year plan. Recently, we were unable to make a property we own pencil for development after when we initially looked at it. If we had some SDC waivers, it could have. We've unfortunately since sold the building, and that was recently within the last month. Also, rental rates in Old Town are suppressed by many factors within the neighborhood. With portions of the PDC plan, it could ultimately help with the rates and allow landlords such as us to attract and develop additional office, retail, and hospitality businesses. As a longtime employer in Old Town, I am in support of the PDC plan as well. We've seen some growth in the retail and hospitality, yet it's been slow, as we've said in other testimony. Many of the components of the plan could be a catalyst for more businesses and employment. One component of the recommendations from the Old Town Chinatown Community Association for the PDC plan calls for the 3rd Street closure to sunset with inclusive streetscape modifications. The Old Town Hospitality Group is in unanimous favor of this, as the closure has affected all the businesses in and around it. We've got recommendations for alternatives to this closure that could help these businesses, as well as positively affect the daytime population, allow for storefront activation, and influence crime. And personally, as a retrospective ratepayer, I am in support of this. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Welcome.
My name is Ron Peterson. Hello, all the commissioners, and hello, Mayor Hales. From what I've read, and I can't say that I've read everything, but from what I have read, I have to agree. I think that Howard should probably run it, and I think you should probably approve it. You may disagree and understand why. It has to boil down with the color of money. But I do believe that the Old Town Chinatown area is improving, and I see where it has improved. So I believe it should be a viable resource for the city itself. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I agree with Commissioner Fish. Ratepayers should not have anything to do with this. Ratepayers have been stung, and it's going to take a little while for them to calm down. So if there's any indication that ratepayers are involved in this, there will be a backlash. two of you are now being recalled. Could be a third. We object to the language of the threats on page 5, if you have the 5-year plan in front of you. And it says, threats. What could harm OT/CT? And on the third item, it says, increase in social services. That indicates to us an attitude. Didn't say anything about decreasing social services. It said about increasing social services. That tells us that this neighborhood, this group, does not want to do anything about the homeless that sleep on their doors. Nothing. They see it as a threat. Increase in homelessness. One of the things that you hear over and over again from a friend of mine, Mr. Lightning, is why is it that our corporations, our companies, our business alliance don't help with the homeless problem? Why is that? Why don't they get out front on this? Because it's to their advantage. You talk about the violence in the area, and you talk about data. Well, that data are human beings. And there's a reason for this. There's a reason for the violent crime in this area. And we can have solutions to it, but we have to do it together and not say decrease social services. They should be talking about celebrating social services because the religious people have stood up and done a lot. And this business community under the Business Alliance has done nothing. If you accept this as is without taking those words out, it'll come back to haunt you. And you're already all in trouble. Don't do anything stupid. Take those words out and say, this is a progressive city. I don't like those words. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks very much. Appreciate you. Thanks. Next three, please.
Are Sarah Stevenson, Kathleen Bushman, and Rehana Ansari. And they'll be followed by Jackie Peterson, Lightning, and Steve Entwistle.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I should start.
Go ahead, Sarah, please.
Right. Well, I'm Sarah Stevenson, Executive Director of Innovative Housing, which is a nonprofit affordable housing developer based in Old Town. IHI has completed 2, soon to be 3, multifamily apartment projects in Old Town for a total of 191 living units in the neighborhood. Each project, there we go, involves the preservation and restoration of a historic building and seismic upgrades. I'd like to use our 3 projects to help illustrate why I think the PDC 5-year action plan is so important to restore and revitalize the many beautiful buildings in our neighborhood. Historic preservation and seismic upgrades come with a high price tag. In fact, 2 of our 3 projects could not have been completed without public subsidy, in large part because the cost of historic preservation and seismic upgrades drive development expenses beyond what the market can support. The seismic work at Musoff Manor, for example, cost $1.7 million, or 17% of hard costs. At Erickson Fritz, it'll be $1.1 million, or 12% of hard costs. Restoring and preserving historic elements is also very costly. Fortunately, at Musoff, Erickson, and Fritz, they were all eligible for historic tax credits that helped offset these increased costs. Unfortunately, historic tax credits only cover 20% of eligible expenses. That does not cover all the costs of preservation, and they are not feasible on a lot of small projects because of their high transaction costs. That's one reason we didn't use them on our third, on another project, the Modern Rich. The PDC 5-year action plan is critical to our neighborhood because it commits TIF funds to the preservation and restoration of Old Town's unique historic assets, many of which are small, family-owned properties. Based on IHI's experience, I am especially excited about low-interest or forgivable loans for seismic work, which are critical to preserving many of these buildings, And the fact that PDC funds can now be used to support mixed-income projects as opposed to solely commercial projects, because so many of our important historic assets were built with commercial storefronts and housing above. So we really need access to mixed-use funds. I urge you to support the PDC five-year plan, and I applaud your commitment to helping us revitalize Old Town while simultaneously keeping it a critical historic center that celebrates so many different cultures and helps continue to tell Portland's many stories for future generations. Thank you.
Sarah, can I ask you a question since you're something of an expert here on housing? Mm-hmm. One of the details we got in the original briefing was that the affordability covenant on the housing that we would incentivize with SDC waivers would come with a 10-year covenant in terms of affordability. Now, you've had a lot of success competing for funding from the Housing Bureau through NOFAs. And what's the typical covenant that you're bound by when you get a city subsidy for housing 0 to 60?
Every dollar that we receive, including SDC waivers, come with a 60-year affordability requirement.
60 years.
60, 6-0.
And do you have an opinion about the proposal as to the 10-year duration of the covenant?
I am a bit concerned personally about what happens in 10 years. However, it would be infeasible to expect a for-profit developer to commit to 60 years. They wouldn't do it, which would make the waiver impractical and unuseful. So I'm trying to balance how you deal with what happens in 10 years when maybe that affordability goes away with creating a tool that might actually stimulate development. And since it's a limited time frame, we're talking about really just 5 years up to a certain money cap for a certain number of units, I support the SDC waivers.
What if in the 10th year...
Or another pot. I'm also totally open to another pot.
I think we have consensus on that.
Yeah.
Sarah, if at the end of the 10 years, no longer bound by the covenant, the landlord wanted to turn it into either luxury condos or high-end rentals or whatever, do you think it would be appropriate at that point for the council to recapture the SDCs?
I don't. Not if the bargain that is struck is that the waivers are in place to in exchange for 10 years of affordability at a certain level.
So let me tweak that and just offer you another scenario. What if we deferred the SDCs for as long as they stayed affordable?
I am not a for-profit developer, so I'm not somebody who would be using the particular tool that we're talking about. Me personally, that makes some sense. I would think that you should talk to someone who might actually be using it, you know, as you explore that.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, there's an echo of this debate, having been here before, when we debated a bunch of FAR bonuses that we have in the zoning code, and what the council will shortly hear in the Planning and Sustainability Bureau's work on the comp plan is we're going to propose to get rid of most of those and only keep a few, because the council had long and concerned debates about tuning these prospectively. Most of them have never been used. So again, it's the spirit of this effort is do something, please, now. I think it would be useful if you're willing to share the information to see the more detailed financial pro formas for your projects, assuming those are something you would disclose.
I'd be happy to.
And just so the council can see how these subsidies have worked in practice on those buildings. I think the other statistic that I haven't seen, but that you've done more in this district probably than anybody.
Probably not as much as Central City Concern.
That's fair. Okay. Yeah, you're up there.
Citywide, they've been a distinguished developer.
Yeah. but the rate of renovation versus the number of yet unrenovated historic buildings, be interesting to know that. You know, if we'd done 6 out of 150, it would just be interesting to see at the current rate of activity, i.e. not much, how many more years is it going to be till we get around to the buildings that are crumbling? I think that might help heighten the urgency of, above all, try something, because these buildings aren't going to last another 10 years while we debate whether or not we've tuned the subsidy right.
Well, Mayor, just in all due respect, since these were hard-fought battles that occurred largely when you were not on the council, the 60-year affordability covenant at 0 to 60 is designed to make sure the public gets a benefit for its investment. And this city and the council have decided that a 60-year return is valid. Bumping it to 80% and saying we only get a 10-year return is a major policy shift. It may be the right policy shift. It may even be good policy. But it represents a drastic change from what we do at 0 to 60. And I think it's worthy of ventilating and discussing. It may be appropriate. But for those who say the goal here is to create a supply of middle-income housing, let's be clear, after 10 years, that's no longer that is not the deal we're striking. And in 10 years, the housing can revert to whatever the landlord wants, which is why we slapped a 60-year affordability covenant on the same kind of public financing for people at 0 to 60. We're bumping it up to 80 and now saying it's a 10-year covenant. I think that's something we need to debate. It may be appropriate. It may be the right slice. It is not an insignificant detail, and it's a 50-year decrease off of what we currently require.
Sure, and what Sarah's pro forma will show is that the SDC waiver was actually a very small part of this total subsidy that those very affordable units had to have in order to work. They had to have tax credits. They had to have a lot of other things to make those projects pencil. Again, the question before us is, what will it take to make projects pencil in a healthy real estate market in a part of town where not much is happening without subsidy? And that's, you know, color of money is an interesting debate, but the bottom line is buildings with crumbling brick mortar and U signs in them that we don't want to leave in that condition much longer. We appreciate you. Thank you.
Sure. Would you like me to send the pro formas?
That would be great if you're willing.
I'll do that.
Thank
and
you.
It would be interesting to compare them to the pro forma of a for-profit.
Yeah, we've seen a couple of those, you know, at least hypothetical pro formas of what a building on a parking lot might require in order to actually happen. So it'll be interesting to compare those two and see how close we are to closing that gap. I appreciate you doing that. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. My name is Rehana Ansari, Government Relations Manager for the Portland Business Alliance. I'm here to express our support of the PDC's five-year action plan for Old Town Chinatown. Old Town Chinatown, including the historic Skidmore District, presents unique challenges and opportunities for redevelopment, and we are pleased that there is a renewed focus in this neglected part of downtown. We applaud PDC for developing strategies to promote private sector investment, job growth, and retail activity, as well as to address neighborhood livability in the area. PBA convened a diverse group of property owners, business, and community members to create the Skidmore Old Town Chinatown Task Force report, which you have received. Though not all of the recommendations are relevant to the five-year action plan before you today, those that are support the plan's goals for neighborhood investment, business vitality, and district livability, such as facilitating historic renovation, improving safety, and maintaining the cultural heritage and identity of the area. In particular, we appreciate the proposal to waive system development charges for moderate-income housing in the area. Doing so would promote a healthy and vibrant 24-hour community that is mixed income. In our view, to be most effective, our preference is for the waiver to extend for 10 years with a cap of 1,000 units. A longer time period will more closely follow development cycles. Waiving SDCs will jumpstart private sector investment and will lead to more revenue for the city in the future. Additionally, the waiver supports our city's land use planning goals to accommodate growth by redeveloping an existing built environment rather than pushing the edges out. We look forward to working with all of you as well as our partners at the PDC for a reinvigorated Old Town Chinatown. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm Kathy Bushman, and my fear is that Portland could well be on its way to becoming like another San Francisco or New York City, where the working class and the middle class cannot afford to live. The average price of real estate in New York sells for over $1 million. The average real estate price sale price in San Francisco is $800,000. and the median income of people living in those two cities is well over the national average by at least 20 to 25,000, 30,000 more than what the rest of us make in median income. And Oregon is not at the top of that median income scale. So I fear that that's my fear, because I've lived in Seattle and I've lived in Portland, and Seattle was gentrified, went through all these gentrification programs long before Portland. That's one of the reasons I had to relocate. I couldn't afford to live in Seattle. And I knew a guy that was making $35 an hour in the 90s, and he couldn't afford any longer to live in Seattle. And he moved, he didn't feel like he could, and he moved to the San Juan Islands and put up with a two-hour commute to get to work. I know that these gentrification programs always come with promises to deliver affordable units or a certain amount, but they never seem to materialize. And call me cynical, I saw this happen in Northeast Portland, where I used to live, and it's been pretty well whitewashed. And I mean literally. It seems like a lot of the former historic residents of Northeast Portland have been relocated and concentrated in a poverty pocket in Gresham. This is why I'm cynical. And I hope, with very faint hope, that this will be any different. The average rental price in Portland went up 25%, more than 25%, by your own figures. Somebody calculated this. Between 2006 and 2013, while wages remained stagnant. And I recently read on the internet where actually on a business site, with Merrill Lynch site actually, that the average median wage went down since 2007 by over 8%. If that's true, and I know it's true, that more than 50% of most middle-class Americans do not have more than a couple of months' savings to see them if they should lose a job or encounter a medical health issue or any other emergency. So I don't see that we need to, because I heard somebody say that we should be worried because out-of-state travelers come here and have to look at Portland poverty. Well, if they're wealthy enough to travel, they're doing a lot better. I went 20 years without taking a vacation as a single mother. I have no sympathy for these people wealthy enough to travel or even take a vacation, thank you. My heart doesn't quite reach out to them. If you've got to criminalize the poor and the homeless in order to cleanse the Portland area of the undesirables, this doesn't sound good to me. Is Oregon for Oregonians, or is it for out-of-state travelers? Is Portland policy for us or for somebody that's going to visit here from out-of-state? I don't care what they think. Don't come if they don't like it. Don't come back. I would like to see a policy that will not increase the number of homeless. I know that in 2011, between 2011 and 2013, the homeless population grew by 10%. I'm going to prophesy that the homeless population, given the inflationary rate of housing in the Portland area, the average rate for rentals, if it continues to increase at the way it has in the last few years, that the homeless rate will increase by at least 15 to 20% in the last year. I'm certain of it. I have no doubt.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, let's take the next all. Let's take the next three, please.
Are Jackie Peterson, Mr. Lightning, Steve Entwistle, and they'll be followed by Betty Jean Lee, Terry Chung, and Lynn Longfellow.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners.
The mic on the other one. I'm sorry. There you go.
I'm sorry. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. Some of you have seen me before. My name is Jackie Peterson. I am a professor emerita of American history. I've lived in Portland, in Northeast Portland, for 23 years, and I have been working in Old Town as a student of Old Town and doing oral history, doing installations, exhibitions, walking tours for almost that same amount of time. And I am now a member of the board of the Old Town Chinatown Community Association. I'm also the only non-Chinese member of the board of a new nonprofit, which you'll hear about from Terry Chung shortly, called the Portland Chinatown History and Museum Foundation. And in collaboration, this is an historic collaboration with the Oregon Nikkei Legacy Center, Lynn Longfellow unfortunately had to depart, we are working and hoping very much to be able in the next few years to develop a multi-ethnic heritage museum, archive, and center in Old Town to reflect the history, this very complex history of the neighborhood. I often use the analogy of the Lower East Side of New York for this neighborhood and what we could make of it. I don't think any of us are under any illusions that we don't want to pick up the social services, we're not going to eliminate the homeless, we're not going to turn this into a pearl. And even if those developers who build 100 units or 200 uses of housing with SDC waivers, and after 10 years decide that they want to turn them into condos, I'm not certain they're going to find people who would pay those rents even in 10 years. I think it's a gamble. So I'm here even after a year of very intense discussion with my fellow board members and other leaders in the neighborhood to support this five-year plan. There are aspects to it that are not perfect. However, I think there's no question that PDC has come a very long way as a result of those discussions in the last year. They've listened hard, and so for the first time a year ago, there was not much in this plan that talked about those buildings that you have talked about and expressed concern about, those crumbling buildings. We're still not quite there, and I was actually pleased to hear the Portland Business Alliance outline another scenario for the SDC waivers, because there is a piece here that is not included. I mean, when you talk about saving those crumbling buildings, these are the buildings that are small, privately owned. Many of them are still Chinese owners. And those buildings are 1, 2, and 3 stories high. Most of them still have unutilized housing above. They are mixed use, and they are not eligible for these SDC waivers at this time. It's all new construction. So even though we're there, almost there, I would like you to think in your wisdom how we can, with another color of money, how we in fact can save this part of Old Town Chinatown, 2 National Historic Districts. If you're talking about the buildings that look bad that you think are at risk, those buildings are not exactly eligible for everything that this toolkit is offering. We'd like to extend it so that it does. And we want to thank you very much for considering this entire plan, the livability grants, the seismic pilot, even the continuation of older programs that were aimed now at these smaller buildings, I think can turn this neighborhood's historic properties around and become an asset that will be a source of pride for all the citizens of Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Lightning, welcome.
Welcome. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Think Lab. I do agree with this plan. I think it should be passed. I think there is necessary money for development that's needed, and I think this plan will provide that and begin more development. Now, I was born in Good Samaritan, and I watched real close what happened in Northwest Portland, where people didn't think people would invest. And we had a lot of people out of California. They were buying up everything they could. And one of their things they would say, I can sell something in California and buy 2 buildings in Portland. That's a great deal to me. So they must see opportunity to invest the dollars. I mean, they're investors. They want to get a reasonable return. There must be incentives provided. We saw that happen in Northwest. We saw that Mr. Singer jumped in on 23rd First. The California investors followed. We saw everybody move to the Pearl. The direction of investment in the investors are going to be placing their money in this location. They need the incentives. A lot of problems we had in Northwest, and I hate to say this, and some people will disagree, that great historic tax preservation sometimes deters a lot of people wanting to invest dollars because it's so restrictive. And some people may disagree with me on that, but a lot of people who were putting money into Northwest Portland, they wanted to stay away from that because they could do with their properties what they wanted to do. And as far as on new development, we have to look at some of these old buildings. They're dinosaurs. They're ready to be demolished. But, you know, let's not get too upset about what I'm saying, because in Northwest, if you looked, they were able to build buildings with the same type of character, the same type of look, and there were beautiful, brand-new buildings that the tenants loved, all brought up to code, and the property values went through the ceiling. Saving some of these old buildings, we have to be a little bit less sensitive and understand. We want to improve the area, but if it doesn't make sense, demolishing the building sometimes is the answer. Look around, and if we stay within a certain character, and a lot of these buildings can be built very similar to what you have there, but a brand new building. And let's face it, some of these old buildings will cost so much, it just doesn't make sense. So to get a lot of that money coming in, we need to be less sensitive on those old historic structures and understand that this is in the path of opportunity. The investment dollars are going to follow. It's being watched very close. And let's face it, when they're done developing out Moss Pearl, they're going to be jumping right next door, and this is where they're going to place their money, but they want the best deals and the best return on their dollars, and that's what it comes down to at the end of the day for these developers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, City Council. My name is Stephen Entwistle, and I'm representing Individuals for Justice, and we disagree with this proposal completely. And let me tell you why. Number one is you're overlooking an entire community that live there. You've badmouthed them. You call them threats. People that live, that are already existing, living in these buildings that are mostly dilapidated. Okay, and I'll agree with Lightning on that. You're overlooking. I mean, I haven't heard anybody talk about the where these folks are going to go. Okay, I mean, are we going to just line them up on the bridge and shoot them into the river? I mean, I don't know. I just hear a lot of threats. Well, I'll tell you what the threat is. Okay, the threat is a capitalist threat. Okay, a big capitalist threat. And this capitalist threat has no heart. All it has is a talk of stakeholders. Okay. I've heard a lot of talk about stakeholders. I had no heard anything about the residents that live there, people that are struggling very hard living on the streets. You badmouth them. They're problems. There's somebody that needs to be disposed of, okay? You guys are just really, really have a hard time. This is the biggest anti-community project that I've ever seen Portland ever do. This is as big as anti-community as I've ever seen. I mean, whose house? Mr. Hales, whose house? Whose house? So, a whole section of citizenry that are going through the hardest times, the most vulnerable people in this city, are a threat. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And I'm sure they do too. By the way, I'm going to announce my candidacy to run for mayor on this day of July 16th, 2014. And I'm going to run as an openly socialist mayor. Let that be put on record. Openly socialist. Why? This is why. This is why. And by the way, you guys got reelected again. Like Lightning said, you deserved it. I think you deserve. Dual Nixons deserve to be kicked around a little more. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Next three.
Are Betty Jean Lee, Terry Chung, and Lynn Longfellow?
I think Ms. Longfellow had to leave.
Okay, then we'll go with Susan Carter. And that's the last person who signed up.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. My name is Betty Jean Lee. I represent the National Chinese American Citizens Alliance in the Portland chapter here in Portland. I am very fond of the Old Town Chinatown, mainly because my grandfather and my father passed out rice during the Depression in the neighborhood to the underprivileged and those that were in need. Many of us, my peers, want to make sure this five-year plan so that we can pass this heritage on to our children and grandchildren. We appreciate your help and your support. And personally, I have served on many, many studies for the city, and many of these studies have sat on somebody's desk and nothing happens. Hopefully, this will not happen with this five-year plan. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mayor Harrells, persons of the council, my name is Terry Chung. I think at one point or another you've actually received a letter from me addressed to our mayor. I am the president of the Portland Chinatown History and Museum Foundation, which was created about 4 months ago in an effort to bring awareness to the fact that the history of Chinatown, there were actually two Chinatowns, is being lost, as also the cultural sites of our ancestors are also being lost there. Being a native Portlander, born in Emmanuel Hospital, grandfather had a market on 3rd Avenue, a meat market there. I've seen a lot of changes. And as far as the two gentlemen who were sitting before me, they forget that Chinatown in the 50s and 60s had its own problems with homeless. It had a lower income at individuals at that town at that time. It had low had housing of mixed use, older Chinese who were basically living out their last days upstairs in some of these buildings. And this, what they refer to their neighborhood before them, this was the neighborhood of the Chinese and the Japanese. And they need to remember that and also respect that. I would like to recognize Mayor Hales and PDC for having come so far in the last 4 months. I read your letter about the wanting to move some funds from the PDC or having the PDC move it from just new developments to revitalizing the area for seismic upgrades. Those are desperately needed for those areas. I would point out that many of the developers are looking at places to develop. They're looking at the easy ones to do. Those are the ones that have the 50, 60, 100 units that they can pencil out. But unfortunately, many of the buildings that we're really looking at that have the most structural defects are those that maybe had, oh, maybe 15, 20 units above them and street mixed use. And those are the ones that have the longest history, really, in for us in the Chinese community and are very have a deep sense of urgency for their preservation. But they're also the hardest to work with, and I realize that. I'd like to also recognize the PDC for having come so far from where they were 4 months ago in terms of allowing, recognizing that some of the funds have to be used for mixed use, because that's key to the redevelopment of this area. Big box developments don't make it down there. This was an area that's always been smaller units, making a successful transition. I point out Mississippi. I point out Alberta. Those are not developments by the PDC. Those are developments by smaller units being coming in. Those are vibrant areas. And unfortunately, many of the property owners, of the Chinese property owners, they have a different mentality in terms of preserving their property and developing their property than, I'll say, the modern businessman. Their idea was rent out the place, have a steady stream of income, but they never looked at the idea of, oh, hey, the city's going to go ahead and make us put in sprinkler systems. The city's going to make us come in and redo the stairways. The city's going to make us come in and do whatever the new developments had to be. They were never in it to make the profits, to be able to upgrade their properties as change went by. So many of these buildings that are owned by the Chinese, they don't have the deep pockets to go ahead and do this development. So I would say thank you, Mayor Hales, PDC, for creating some tools that will help, potentially help, in this area of seismic upgrades. For me, I have five main things I'd like to emphasize here. One, I would like to maintain the historic nature and cultural nature of this district. It's the only one we have left. There is no other district that has a cultural feel to it. We've lost all the others. The Pearl, you could say, well, why don't we create another Pearl? You create another Pearl, you have no cultural setting left. People say, the Skidmore, look at the Skidmore. There's no cultural feeling there. You've got a bunch of buildings. But there's no feeling. People come, go. There's nobody living down there. Two, seismic upgrades. This tool for the long-term owners of historic buildings is desperately needed. And if there's some way that can be found to helping them with no-cost loans or some tool that's in your toolbox that will help them pay back, but at the same time give them the tool to help upgrade their properties, that would be wonderful. I also still have a concern here with the PDC in terms of the height limitations within this National Historic District. I mean, the pushing of the heights up to 175 feet or higher in some areas is of great concern to me. I know the National District says 75 feet, but the Portland Planning Bureau has on the tables 100 feet within that district. And to me, you go from a three-story building and you have a 17-story building right next door, just decimates the feel, the cultural feel of that area. Mixed-use housing, affordable housing to maintain the historical appearance of this area is important. I mean, why can't we have buildings that do integrate within them facades? Those facades that will create the feeling of a tenement building that had four stories, but you had the window spaces there that looked like it. Why can't we have more of those in there? Why can't developers find the tools? I mean, of course, you are the critical component there that will help these individuals do it. And again, part of my organization, we feel like we need to tell the history of the area because it is the only area in Portland that still has a history to tell. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Jerry, but I would like to add to the fact that I agree with most of everything that he said. However, with the restrictions on the height of the buildings, I think we need to consider the economic development of the area, and the height restrictions, I think, should be considered, but also the fact that the economic factor should be considered as well, but I think that there should be a compromise to make it a viable area and economically viable.
Thank you.
I would wait and say one thing. Please remember the historical designation does set a height limit on it, and are we going to lose that historical designation if we go ahead and move beyond that height limitation?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both. Thanks very much. So we know that debate's coming, too, yes. So anyone else signed up? Then I do want to call Sarah and Patrick back. I have some questions. I imagine other council members might as well.
I said Susan Carter.
Oh, I'm sorry. You weren't in the room, so come on up. Sorry.
I'm just waiting.
There you go. Thank you. Welcome.
I'm just...
give us your name again.
I didn't come... Susan Carter. I didn't come here prepared. I read about this, been out of town, read about it just this morning. Called down at City Hall, and everybody surprisingly was busy. I wanted to come down here and learn about it. I don't blame you from staying away from what they're at on raising the rates on the water bills. I mean, I've heard lots of people that I think, I don't blame you for not wanting to touch it. Anyway, for our retirement, we do rental property, and that was what caught my eye. We have 31 units, Westmoreland, Woodstock, right near Reed College, over by Multnomah, Barber. We have a place that's between Lair Hill and John's Landing, so it has a view of the river, I mean of the mountains, windows, floor to ceiling. And I see that the rent, the lowest rent, was going to be $1,157 for a one-bedroom. The one with the nice view is a two-bedroom. I don't have anything that is that high. And that was a one-bedroom. These are two bedrooms I'm talking about. I even have a one-bedroom that has $695. So I'm wondering, how can you call this affordable housing? I mean, at $1,175, who is Section 8, the housing authority? Are they paying the fees? How are you going to call this? I mean, I'm renting to people who are going to Oregon Health Sciences. I'm renting to people who are working. I see what their student loans are. I see how much they're making. By the time they pay everything, how is this going to work out for the average person? When I have these kind of places and not one of them is $1,157. So how are you going to get people to be doing this that are low income? That is sort of one of the questions that I would like to hear some feedback about. You're talking about putting a lot of money into one neighborhood. We have a lot of parks in Portland that aren't really doing much. I don't think Arrow Heights, which has been renamed Brentwood Darlington, to give it, but it's still the same neighborhood. They don't have much up there, and they could certainly use it. So I'm just sort of curious and would like to find out more about this. Where is this money going to be coming from? You can't keep putting these kind of fees and this kind of things. There are a lot of people that have small businesses. They're all already hit with a lot of money with TriMet, with everything else. I know someone who is starting a business has not made one penny, and had to pay over $1,000 with fees and different things. So I think maybe some of this should be thought out a little bit more. I will be doing more of my homework on it, but I wanted to come down and be involved. So I'm just the ordinary citizen that...
Great. Well, thank you. We appreciate you doing that. Thank you.
My daughter may be talking to you soon about a rental. So. They sound very nice.
Well,
and, very
and they also, it'll take a month to rent them. And these are, one of them is a two-bedroom.
They sound very nice and very affordable. So
with a garage and basement. So their ideas are.
So one detail that I want to make sure I understand, and that is the proposal for the SDC waivers. If I take a parking lot and build a housing project on that parking lot, I am eligible, right?
Correct, assuming the project meets the income requirements, underwriting standards.
Right, they meet the other specifications. If I take an old mixed-use, a building that was originally built as a mixed-use building, a store on the ground floor and housing units above, and I want to do a renovation of that, maybe those housing units haven't been housing units in a while. Am I eligible for an SDC waiver in that situation? Well, I'm not sure if I'd pay SDCs to start with. So if I'm simply renovating a building, would I be paying SDCs in the first place? And then if I am paying them, would I be able to seek the waiver if
no,
I met the
other
criteria?
No, the pilot is recommended to be limited to new construction only. Based on our prototypes, we found that it was not an effective tool for rehabilitation projects because of prior credits, and so.
But yet we are proposing to use some tax increment money to support the renovation of seismically challenged buildings.
Right.
Correct. It was a more effective tool in that scenario.
But could they be combined?
Could they be combined on existing buildings or new buildings?
If we allowed the use of the SDC waiver for buildings that were being reused rather than built anew, could we could we also use some of the seismic funds to support the extraordinary seismic repair costs or renovation costs of those buildings? I'm just trying to see. It sounds like we may have worked an imbalance here of making new development possible. Good idea, because we haven't had much. But we're also trying to preserve those historic buildings, thus the commitment of the seismic funds. We also want to succeed at that goal of renovating the old buildings that have, you know, that are now underutilized. So I'm trying to.
So we have $57 million.